Today is April 17th, 2013, and this is episode number 200. Yes, 200 of the Apple Context Machine, and that's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin Scalawag. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to question or comment, question on, or if you want to talk to us, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, we've only had 200 episodes, so I can understand why you'd get tripped up on that line.
That's true. Unbelievable that we have managed to do 200 episodes.
I know. It's stunning. That's like 700 in dog years.
That's true. It is. And more specifically, I think we're at 6 weeks in a row where we've done a show every week.
Which, yay! Yeah, that's amazing. Go us, really.
Go us. It's amazing. It's like we're all grown up.
Yeah. I mean,
it's similar to being grown up, but we're not actually all grown up.
Okay. Yep. Good point. Yeah. So we're growed-ish.
Yeah, we are growed-ish. So I guess this is kind of a momentous episode for us, huh? 200.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, that I don't think that will stop us from giving everyone what they expect from us, which is our insight into the news.
Low expectations, sir. No expectations. You have set the bar delightfully low. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is a fait accompli.
So, and I've got your back.
That's fantastic. So I don't know. I guess what are we going to talk about? Hey, look, Jeff. It's Dave Hamilton.
Hey, Dave.
How you guys doing?
Fine, man. What are you doing here?
Well, you know, I heard you guys were recording, and I saw the big red light on that said, don't come in, so I came right in.
You know, that's how I got in here, too.
It works. It's totally awesome, because you know that it's not going to be packed, and that's
it's
nice.
True. Yeah. It's totally true, and that's fantastic, by the way. So, you know, why we have you here, I guess, all right, we'll quit the shenanigans. We're asking all our guests today to talk about their Apple predictions. So, Dave, go.
Predictions, huh? Some ground rules. Do these have to be product predictions? Can it just be any predictions regarding Apple, obviously, in the future? Because that's what predictions are about.
Yeah, but the rule is they have to be your predictions.
Okay.
Yeah. We're kind of putting everybody on the spot, and we didn't tell anybody any ground rules except for talk about Apple predictions.
Okay.
So we're kind of looking forward to what you think.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm filling time here while I'm thinking about what it is I'm going to say. So
don't worry, we'll edit that out.
That's how we do it. That's right. Well. You know, there's been a lot of talk about something with a TV. So I'll go on record and say that I predict two things about the TV. I think at some point, probably in the next 18 months, perhaps even this year, we'll see an actual television from Apple. But I also think we'll see, and more importantly, I think we're going to see a pretty major update to the software for the Apple TV, that as we know it now, that the set-top box that we call the Apple TV. And I think the significance of that update will be third-party apps being installed on there. As we all know, these things run iOS. It's just sort of a more clamped down version of iOS. So I think we're going to see some of those clamps removed, and I think we're going to see third-party apps allowed on the Apple TV.
So what about all the problems that Apple has had getting anybody to let them have content?
Well, I think a lot of that goes away, though, right? I don't have nearly as much trouble getting content on my iPad as I do on my Apple TV.
Right. I'm thinking more from the standpoint of the TV. Not the updated set-top box.
Okay, so content onto the TV. You mean in terms of like partnering with cable providers or networks or somebody to get content there with to buy, perhaps even to bypass the cable providers. Yeah, they lost their best negotiator for that stuff about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So I honestly don't think that there will be anything groundbreaking there. I think it'll be a great.
Really?
Go ahead.
Just flat out. You don't think there's going to be anything groundbreaking with that because Steve Jobs is gone.
Yeah. Well, what do they need? Right. What are they missing now? I'll couch that by saying you've got the iPad, right, or the iPhone, it doesn't matter, that can stream, or your Mac, that can stream to the Apple TV with AirPlay, right? So with that, i.e. third-party apps on the Apple TV by proxy, right, I've got a lot of my content that I want already, right, with Hulu, obviously Netflix, although I'm not entirely convinced of Netflix, what the heck they're doing with streaming, because it's sort of a waste, but the content's sort of a waste. But, you know, I mean, you get the ABC app. You've got all kinds of different stuff that you can stream to your Apple TV. What you don't have is live news and all live sports. You have some live sports, but live news and live sports. And I think if Apple could seal those deals up, then what else is missing?
Well, the other thing that's missing is a comprehensive and easy way to get all of the network shows and network and including cable shows. I mean, to get subscriptions, to think of it in terms of TiVo, right?
Yeah.
To get all the shows that you want to watch from one place without having to go to a bunch of different apps. I think that an Apple TV needs that, don't you?
Well, now, that would be nice.
Now, why does it have to be an actual television? Why can't Apple just do that with Apple TV? And then we provide our own television.
As we do now.
Yeah, money. I mean, the big thing about the Apple TV for Apple is being able to introduce a significant new revenue stream.
Sure. But the software is going to be the same as what we are seeing on the Apple TV. I mean, certainly that's the beta test group, right? Is we've got it. We've got the software decoupled from the television right now. And once we get that right, then you can bake an Apple TV into a set top box into a television and sell it as an all in one. And I think it would be smart for Apple to do that. But they've got to get the rest of this kind of in place first. And I think they're working very hard on that. But in terms of giving you one-stop shopping for everything, how far away is the iTunes store from that? Now, not from a user interface standpoint, because the iTunes store's UI sucks, mm-hmm. but from a content standpoint, a lot of stuff is available there.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily expensive. You'd be talking, you know, thousands of dollars a year, hundreds of dollars, certainly many hundreds of dollars a year to subscribe to even, you know, a dozen shows.
And what are you paying for cable every month?
That's not going to work. True. That is true, but you have orders of magnitude more content in addition to being able to subscribe to the shows.
So what if it's $100 a month from Apple mm-hmm. to get this subscription, right? I mean, that's no different than what you're paying to your cable. It's actually probably less than what people are paying to their cable companies right now. Now you don't get
everything.
You still, but that's the thing. You don't have live. You know, you're missing out on live sports, and I think at some point the NFL is going to have to cut a deal. But
you would think,
and Major League Baseball too.
Well, Major League Baseball is already there.
Yeah, but not football.
Wait, is baseball the one where they have the stick?
No, you're thinking. Yeah, of I mean, cricket.
You can get Major League Baseball to a degree on your Apple TV today. There's an app
right
there.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
Football is stuck in the 1950s.
So you're proposing $100 a month to effectively subscribe to, say, streaming versions of everything that's say, currently available in the iTunes store.
Yeah, or maybe the last four episodes worth of it.
That would be better, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I'm thinking about what I get from Comcast. Because I get a lot of this from Comcast, right? Through On Demand. If I missed a show, and we recently went through, we're TiVo people here, but we recently went through a thing where our TiVo was expiring shows incorrectly. And so we wound up relying on Comcast On Demand more than anything else. And the shows were there. You know, we just went in and found the episode and good to go. And some shows had seasons worth of episodes in Comcast On Demand. And some of them have the last three or four or something. And
When we've used Comcast On Demand here in the Bay Area, they've been non-HD versions of shows.
Oh, no, so I have both.
The case where you are?
We have both.
Oh, wait. Forget it. We just got the non-HD versions out of Time.
Okay.
Yeah, ignore that.
Okay.
I'll edit that out because I don't want to embarrass myself.
Good for you. You know, and I'm the guy that cut my cable cord a while ago.
Right.
Right.
And I get my content from iTunes Store and from Netflix streaming and from YouTube. I didn't even bother getting a Hulu subscription.
Yeah, we've got a Hulu subscription, but even through this TiVo mess, I had, prior to it starting, I had imposed on the family a Hulu ban for a month just to see if we could live without it because we weren't really using it. And we were using it as a convenience, but, you know, there's other ways to get this content. And even with this TiVo thing, there was only one point where we're like, you know what? The kids were like, well, we can't get it from Hulu, though. I'm like, no, we can. We were trying to find other ways. I said, but this is an extraordinary circumstance, and we still are paying for Hulu. So this, you know, would be stupid not to watch it on Hulu. So we did. But had the TiVo been working, we never would have needed it.
Sure.
And I bet you're spending less. I mean, even if you spend whatever, you know, $30 or $40 for a subscription to a season's worth of whatever your favorite four shows are, that's still. I mean, over the course of 6 months, that's still less, way less than you're paying your cable company.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. If you have a limited number of shows, it is definitely cheaper.
And I have a very limited number of shows. Actually, as of this moment, the only subscription I have through iTunes is for Doctor Who.
Yeah. But, I mean, even if you've got, I mean, you know, even if you've got six shows that you're watching, I mean, that's a lot of shows to follow up with.
Yeah, but it's still cheaper than...
Yeah. So, you know, I think the content's there. It's just got to be set up in a way that it needs to be... Frankly, obviously, as Jeff has pointed out, you can cut the cord and do it. But you've got to be a geek at some level to not necessarily to interact with the technology, but to take a step back and figure out which paths you need to merge in order to make this all work. Apple... you know, for their $100 a month, they can merge these paths for you. And there's probably $70 a month worth of profit in that if you compare it to what Jeff's paying now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, and keep in mind, I am probably an exception in that I'm not interested in following live sports. So that never played into my decision at all. And I know for a lot of people, that in and of itself is reason enough to pay for a cable subscription.
But you're right. Not everybody needs to follow live sports. And Apple already has Major League Baseball. I think they've got something going with the NHL, but off the top of my head, I don't know the details of that. The big one, of course, is NFL. But even if 40% of the people are the people that don't care about the NFL, and I honestly don't know what that number is, but there's some significant number of people that could care less about Major League Football, you know, and I realize I just mixed names, but you know what I'm saying. Then you know, get those people on board and use that momentum to then go and cut a deal with the NFL. But I don't, the NFL makes so much money with their current path that anything that might cannibalize that is not something they're going to enter into lightly.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Apple carts that don't want to be upset.
Yeah, and they've got their franchisees that they have deals with, and I'm sure a lot of those franchise agreements don't allow them to stream this stuff in, you know, just willy-nilly. So you got local markets to contend with and blackouts. I mean, we don't experience that here in New England because every Patriots game is sold out. But in many areas of the country, you can't see the game locally because they want you to show up at the stadium, which is stupid because it's two totally different experiences. But anyway, you know, that's how it works.
That is how it works. Yep. All right, Dave, you know, as you know, we're just now bringing guests onto the show.
Yeah.
And we should have introduced you at the beginning. We should have said Dave Hamilton, who is the president and co-founder of the Mac Observer and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab.
But, you know, the reason we didn't need to do that is because everyone knows who Dave is.
That's right.
That actually is true, but we should have done it anyway. And of course, the drummer for the Macworld All-Stars. And we very much appreciate you stopping by. But can you take us out on your top three iOS apps?
Top three iOS apps. Yeah, I will go by... I'm asked this question often, so I'm going to go by what I'm using most frequently. And that makes it really easy for me. Number one is Fantastical, which has completely replaced my... it is the only calendar I use on my iPhone.
Okay.
That's it. I do everything inside of Fantastical.
Now, they're the winner of the TMO ECA award, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. They are.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So Fantastical is that. I use this app all the time. It's not necessarily the best app in the world, but my Sonos app is one that gets very, very, very regular use by me here. So I'm gonna throw that one in there.
Okay.
Because we have Sonos here at the house and I use it all the time. And then the last one that I'm gonna talk about, I like to talk about, but it is true. It does fit my criteria that I use it all the time. But it's an app that's not an app. It's actually a web app, and it's forecast.io. You don't get it in the App Store. You get it by going to forecast.io, and then you save it as a local app. It's an awesome weather app with a killer user interface, really sleek, clean, simple to use, and it works really, really well. And you will forget that this thing is a web app once you start using it. But that's what I use for the weather these days, for the most part.
All right. Fantastic, man. We appreciate you stopping by. If you can make sure the door gets locked behind you.
That's right.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, we don't want anyone else sneaking in.
I'll do my best for you.
Thanks, man. You rock.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that was really cool of Dave to stop by.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I mean, he completely ruined our show.
Yeah, we need to have a talk with people about the red light.
Yeah. God, seemed like that should totally make sense. But whatever, let's get back to what we were going to talk about. So
yeah,
what I'm thinking
great.
Is that...
Hey, you guys.
I'm here. Bob?
Hey, yeah. Bob.
Hey, everybody. It's Bob Levitis.
Who did you expect? Elijah?
No. Yes?
No? Yes?
No, actually, we didn't expect anyone. It's great to see you.
It is great to see you. Thanks for stopping by.
My pleasure. I saw the red light on. I figure that means you're partying.
Going to talk to Dave about locking the door.
Yeah, I thought we did that.
Are you kidding? Locked doors mean nothing to Dr. Mack.
Fair enough.
I walked right through it.
Doctor who?
I dematerialized. Doctor who?
No, Dr. Mack.
Oh, Dr. Mack, right. Sorry.
No, the craw. Not the craw. Right. The craw. Got it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, this is, you know, it's now that you're here, we're doing our 200th episode.
Now that our rhythm is totally screwed up.
Yes. Thank you. But we're doing our 200th episode of the Apple Context Machine, which I think means we've been doing this for 600 years.
Yes.
That's people years,
not dog years.
Yes, and I just said on Facebook that you guys don't look 200, but...
You're so sweet.
It's a great honor. I hear you're going into syndication now, and you're going to pull down the big bucks.
You heard wrong, sir.
200th episode.
You heard wrong, sir.
Huh.
I'm afraid no one wants to pay us the big bucks.
I don't know what's up with that.
So, you know...
Have you talked to Oprah?
Yeah, Bob, you have Oprah on your speed dial on your iPhone. Just call her.
Yeah, you want me to give her? I'll put in a good word.
Thank you.
No problem.
You're the best.
All right, let's go eat.
So, well, we can't. You know, since we're here.
Are you guys doing a show?
We are actually doing a show.
Oh,
I know. It's a shock to everyone.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do a show then.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Dave about his Apple predictions and
Dave who?
Dave Hamilton.
Oh yes.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll edit that out.
He'll
never know.
Yeah, right.
He'll never know.
He'll never know. And in no way will I actually just turn the volume up during a post. Anyway.
You want to know how I really feel?
I know how you really feel. So we've got him talking about Apple predictions. Maybe we can get your thoughts on this issue.
Okay.
What are your Apple predictions?
Well, one is we're going to get a bigger iPhone. Yeah. And I am really convinced that that's going to happen. Not from any rumors or any inside knowledge, just looking at what's going on with the Samsung phones, that people seem to like it, that big honking size. And really, I was thinking the other day, if they'd put a cell phone in my iPad mini, I'd get rid of my phone and carry an iPad mini as my phone. And that would be my one and only, you know, carry around with me device. That'd be awesome, actually. So I think we're going to see a bigger screen on the iPhone. How's that for a prediction?
Well, you know, it's
got a good beat.
It's
you
a
can
good
dance
prediction.
To it.
So, but my question to you is when? And in this case, I'm actually referencing the rumors that are out there, because so far it seems like Apple is not ready to go. The rumors say that a bigger phone is coming from the generation after the next generation.
Well, that could well be, but I think Apple's got to get in the game, because people are saying, and you know, I've seen more than one fairly high profile writer, you know, say, you know, I like this better than my iPhone.
Okay, but at the same time, as Philip Elmer DeWitt pointed out, I don't know why.
Elmore?
Yeah, I'll edit that out too.
Yeah, right.
As he pointed out, while Samsung sells many more units of smartphones than Apple, their phablets, the GS3 and the Note 2, sell far fewer than units than the iPhone does. So, and I'm strictly taking a devil's advocate standpoint, is this really a problem for Apple?
I don't know if it's a problem, but I see Apple, you know, wanting to proliferate the product line to all the places where there are sizable niches. And so I think maybe a bigger iPhone and maybe a smaller, cheaper iPhone, or maybe just a cheaper iPhone. But I do think Apple, you know, if they want to continue getting the kinds of numbers they've been getting, they're going to have to be very competitive with other offerings. And I think one of those things, maybe the first thing on the list, is that bigger screen. So I think sooner rather than later, and I think this summer. How's that for a prediction?
That's the prediction.
That's a good.
I'm sealing it in a McMayonnaise jar, and you can open it in the summer, but you'll see that I was right.
So do you think Apple will actually go to two different screen sizes for concurrent new models?
iPhone XL.
In other words, you know, heretofore we've had the current iPhone, we've had the previous iPhone and the previous generation before that, and that's how Apple has addressed the entry and mid-levels of the market.
I think it's time for distinct models. I think that you can't just come out with the single model every year again. I think that looking at what's going on out there, you can't be all things to all people. And I think certainly the size thing is a place where I think Apple could get a lot of traction with a bigger and a smaller version of iPhone. Because I do think people like iOS and iOS apps and the experience. But I also think people are looking for bigger and smaller devices to stick in their pockets. And, you know, if Apple's not going to have it, here's the thing. It's not as easy to switch to a different phone operating system as people think, especially if, like us, you have hundreds of apps already. You know, it almost makes it impossible. So you're kind of locked in. But a lot of people aren't. A lot of people only have a handful of apps, and they'll just buy Words with Friends on Android. Okay. And I think, you know, that's something Apple's cognizant of. Apple's looking at that and saying, you know, there's a certain group of people that are going to go with Android now that wouldn't have gone with it a year ago, you know? And what do we do? And I think one of the easy things is give people what they want. And from what I understand, that's the feature people covet, is that bigger screen. I don't think there's anything else about those phones that people rave about. I haven't seen anything.
Google Now will eventually be something that people rave about.
I suppose I should borrow one, but it just makes me feel so icky.
I supposedly have a GS4 on the way, by the way. So I will let you know how icky I feel with it.
Most of the time, the phone companies won't send me phones that aren't Apple because they know how I feel.
Right.
You know, it's like, are you kidding? You want a Samsung phone? Yeah, give me a break.
So your prediction is that Apple will do a large screen phone and have multiple screen sizes in a new device starting with this summer.
Yes.
That's pretty solid, man.
So I could get part of the next generation.
Yeah, that's the name of the movie. iPhone the Next Generation. TNG, for short.
Yes.
But not for long.
did you have another one?
Well, a wearable accessory to your iPhone, iPad stuff. I think that there's a lot of interest in a wrist display done right. And I know that there have been a bunch of things that go on your wrist, including iPod Nanos. But nothing has really hit the sweet spot of being useful and helpful and easy to use. And I think if anybody could pull that off, Apple could. Will they come out with a wearable accessory to your iPhone and iPad? I think the odds are pretty good.
All right.
All right.
Fair enough.
And then finally, TV.
Okay.
I still don't think Apple's going to build 60-inch pieces of glass and ship them all over the country. But it could happen. I think instead they'll figure out a way to make Apple TV or its progeny, the next generation of Apple TV, more palatable to cable operators, dish operators, whatever, and have them be more synchronous. You know, when you buy a TiVo, you can put a cable card in it, and it makes it very friendly to your other programming. Apple doesn't have that kind of interoperability with Apple TV, and I think they need that to control the interface, which I think they'd be great at.
I'd love to
have the Apple remote running on my iPad and be able to control my entertainment system with that. That would be awesome. I don't know how you do that, though. So far, I've tried a million things that supposedly do that, including, but not limited to, Harmony Remote and about a dozen things you plug into one end or the other of your iPhone. And nothing really has worked well enough that I could throw away all the other remotes. They all have to sit in a drawer, and they all have to come out once in a while for something.
Hmm.
And my wife can't figure out how to use any of the other devices.
Of course. And then there's the whole start with this remote to do this piece, then jump over to this remote for this part, and then finally to this remote. Okay, now you can start watching a show.
Well, and then I lose the little dongles. I've probably got three little dongles in my couch somewhere.
That's what she said.
Dongle's a good word. I like that word, dongle.
All right, well, those are some solid predictions. I tell you, though, we probably ought to get back to our regular show. Can you take us out with your top three iOS apps?
Yes, I certainly will. Right now, my very favorite iOS app is Mailbox, which lets me manage my inbox in ways that Apple's Mail app never could. Currently only works with Gmail, but there is no more wait list. You can try it tomorrow or today if you want. If you use Gmail and you subscribe to the theory that your inbox should be empty, And that you should be able to look at males and be able to decide whether they go in the trash, get put away for further action later, or deleted, and do all those things easily and quickly. And, you know, it's just, it's a whole new kind of metaphor, gesture-based metaphor for working with your male. And even though it's, I think, incomplete, there's a couple things that I'd like to see other, in addition to being able to work with other mail accounts than just Gmail. But it's a really nice start, and I think these guys are onto something. And as you may or may not know, the company, I think, was just acquired by Dropbox.
All right. Right.
So that leads me to believe that I'm not the only one that looked at it and said, wow, this is really well done. So I really love that. I really, really love Action Movie FX from Bad Robot, those guys that
you've done some fun things with that, Bob.
Yes, I just emailed you an example from that I did at my desk. But yes, it's a lot of fun. It's free. It's free, but they suck you into buying their effects packs. You'll want them all at $1 or $2 a piece. And my third favorite is Red Laser, because it lets me walk into Fry's, scan a barcode, see if I can find a better price, and have Fry's match the price on the floor right there.
Fair enough.
It's awesome. It's awesome, yeah. Most of the time, I will say, Fry's has the lowest price. But when they don't, they honor right on your Red Laser. You know, they'll look at it, they'll check it on their own machine, and then they'll give it to you at that price.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, Red Laser. And you know what? They used to like look at me funny when I was Red Lasering stuff, but now I think they've accepted that this is how it works, because they promote, we'll match any price.
Right.
They promote it very openly. And nobody's yelled at me for shooting red lasers in, well, weeks or months.
Fair enough.
My third favorite is either the Mac Geek Gab app or Spotify Premium, both of which...
That's your fourth, you know, and fifth.
Yeah, well, I didn't say I could count.
Mac Geek Gab, and what was the other one?
Spotify
Premium.
Oh, I love Spotify. Because whatever song I can think of that I want to hear, Spotify will play for me now, wherever I am, whichever device is in my hand. And for the kind of music I listen to, it's, well, I won't say 100%, but it's pretty close. I get most of what I want from Spotify.
Fair enough. And Bob, cool. we are new. What, were you going to say something, Jeff?
No, I was just adding in my cool. That was it.
Ah, cool. Well, let's actually give that some space. So
cool.
Excellent. All right. So, Bob, we are new at having guests, and we're kind of unorganized today about this. We should have introduced you better. You are, of course, Bob, Dr. Back Levitis. You've written 70,000 books. How many books have you written? Not read.
66, I think.
66 books. That's fantastic.
And a multiple of 11.
Once upon a time, you used to write reviews and columns for us.
I'll be back.
Oh, good.
So it was just a, you know, just a little nudge there. And
yeah, your key card still works on the towers.
I've been thinking about it. I've been actually thinking about it.
That's good. And, of course, you have Dr. Matt Consulting.
Yes.
Any other plugs that we should get in there?
Column in the Houston Chronicle every Tuesday for 15 years.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
That's a good run.
That too.
All right. Well, we appreciate
you. Yeah, that's the longest
stopping.
I've ever lasted anywhere without being fired by a lot.
I had to actually start my own company to make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, mostly I
and
did
it's working
too.
Out pretty well for you so far, Brian.
You know, I don't go in their offices. They've never seen me. We have a hands-off relationship. That's probably why we've gotten along for 15 years.
Probably. Now, our listeners can actually see you in the show notes. We have a great picture of you with your studio set up.
So, I like this Spark Digital mic.
It is certainly impressive looking.
Yes, it looks like they're $1,000 microphones. It's, you know, the same design as their $2,000 Lollipop and Woodpecker mics.
Yeah, I very much like.
So it looks, and it's not expensive, and it comes with cables for hooking up to iOS or Mac or a PC. It's USB or dock connector. Works with dock connector adapter to lightning adapter, and comes with both cables. Pretty nice.
That's very cool.
So, Bob, are you interested in being a more frequent guest on the Apple Context Machine?
Sure. I would love to. I will be an occasional correspondent.
Excellent. Well, next time whatever we'll have you on longer. I have a feeling that we're going to have other people on today, so we should probably get rid of you.
Well, I just want you to know I'm way handsomer than Gene Steinberg or Dave Hamilton.
Note to self, Bob is cuter. Got it.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Well, then we're all clear. I'll lock the door on my way out.
Excellent.
Awesome.
If
thanks,
you could do
Bob.
That, we'd appreciate it.
See ya.
Bye.
Wow, that was really cool seeing Bob. I wasn't expecting him to come by.
Two visitors in one day. It seems like that just never happens.
No, actually, it has never happened.
It has never happened. And neither of them knows what the hell a red light's for.
I know. Do we actually need to have someone check that and make sure the red light actually works?
I think we may need to hire a doorman.
I think so. We also need to talk to Dave about actually locking a door when he leaves.
Yeah. And yeah, well, anyway, so hopefully Bob took care of that and we can get back to our regular. Well, no. Who's that now? Can you get that, Jeff?
Yeah. Hold on. Hey, Ricky.
Where am I?
Ricky Spiro?
Am I caught in a time warp here?
Doctor Who.
No,
oh, wait. I just totally messed that up. Totally messed that up. Is it Dr. Mr. Ricky?
That's the preferred. That's the Dr. Master Mr.
Dr. Master Mr. Ricky. Ricky. So,
but folks, among friends, Dr. Ricky.
Actually, Jeff, since it started with him and you, why don't you introduce Ricky?
All right. So everyone say hi to Ricky Spiro. Ricky started Apple Context Machine long ago, long before it was called Apple Context Machine.
Like two or three show names ago.
Right.
What was the first one?
The Weekly Roundup, I think we called it.
Weekly Roundup.
Yep. And then it turned
into Apple Weekly Report. Or right, was there another name in between?
No, I think that's right. And that's you did that logo.
And then we had to stop calling it that because it was more like the quarterly report. Once we got a hold of it.
the biannual report.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we had to rename it the Apple Context Machine so that folks would stop calling us quite as many bad names.
Which, ironically, didn't change.
Well, it is a delightful and unexpected treat to be back here. I hope I didn't interrupt anything.
No, not at all. We were only recording a show.
Wait, you're recording right now?
As we speak.
You know, well, I have to point out, it's actually the fact that you're here is actually really cool because most people probably don't realize this. The reason I'm in podcasting is because of you.
It's high true. Five.
Yeah.
And as we all know, Jeff is a podcasting whore today. So
you know, I am.
Thanks a lot, Ricky.
Just can't keep it together. Just can't.
No. See what you off. Started?
But this is our 200th episode, counting ones that Ricky actually did. And then Ricky and Jeff actually did. And then Jeff and Brian sort of did. So since we have you here, we've been talking to the other guys about Apple predictions. Do you have any Apple predictions for us?
Well, yeah. So it's like the oldest game on the Mac web, right? What happens next?
It is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since I've stumbled in here, I guess I might as well get something off my chest.
Yeah, play along.
No, you know, it's cool that you guys are doing this. It's been an amazing few years, obviously, watching Apple from the time. So I actually left the show. You guys took over the show like a month before the first iPhone came out. And
we've done seven episodes since then.
one for each version of the iPhone.
Exactly.
It's been a busy few years at Apple, right?
Yeah.
it's it's really been something to watch him go. And now I think the two main questions are they, what are they going to do in TV, and what are they going to do in wearable tech?
Okay.
Right. That's what you hear everybody talking about, are those two categories. And on TV, you know, they're going to keep pulling the thread. Tim Cook has said that, their product releases back it up. They continue to work there, and maybe they'll release a set and maybe they won't. I actually don't think that that's ever going to be a huge product category for them. Even if they do release a big TV, I just don't see the same level of desire out there that there was for someone to solve the phone. I mean, in 2006, when we all had our contacts on our computers and in our email, but we had these stupid phones, it was driving everybody crazy. And TV is available in so many different places. I don't get the sense that changing the way we consume it on that 15-foot experience is really going to change anybody's life. Maybe when it's time to get a new TV, people pick up the Apple version rather than somebody else's. But I just don't see it being a huge category. Wearable tech, Google's obviously sucking up all the oxygen right now with Google Glass. It makes sense that Apple would do something like a watch that talks directly to the phone. And we'll see. I can see that being a big hit product and positioned as kind of an add-on to their other core products, and potentially a really big product on its own. If you get everybody in the world to buy a $100 watch, that's a pretty big product. So I think that's going to be there, and we'll see where they take us. But the more interesting question to me, and I'm curious what you guys think about this, is where, what's the next thing? We see wearable tech, and we know nobody's come back and remade TV. But what else is there? I mean, what if you look at what's going to be going on in 10 years, if right now we're at the beginning of the wearable tech thing with Google Glass and whatever Apple does, what's going on 10 years from now? And the reason I ask that is because even with Steve Jobs, you know, it's funny, you go back and listen to these old interviews with Steve Jobs. There was a conference that he was at in Aspen, a tape that came out a year or two ago, of him talking at a design conference in Aspen in the 80s, I think like 82, a little bit before the Mac came out. And he was talking about the iPad then. So a lot of the ideas about mobile devices, about bringing information with us, that stuff is old. The ideas are old. So we ought to have the ideas floating around for what the big thing is 10 years from now. And I wonder, because I don't hear as much of that now as I did 10 years ago, about what was going to happen with cell phones and all that. And so I wonder what the next big thing is.
I wrote a piece 13 years ago, 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago, saying that it was based on an interview that Steve had given to a print magazine. And he talked about how, so this might have been 14 years ago that I did this, but he talked about how with his next system at home, he could log into his home screen wherever he was.
Yep.
And he, you know, so basically this notion that computers were effectively terminals, and in his case he had a NIC server set up in his house, or maybe he had the NIC server set up at Apple, and he would log in and he would get his home screen, he would get his his apps, his documents, all that sort of, his applications, his software applications even at the time, wherever he was. And I used that piece to argue that I didn't think I didn't think Apple would do a PDA until you could take your home screen with you anywhere.
Huh.
I can't remember exactly what I've argued. And the funny thing is, I can't find that piece anymore. I know it's somewhere on the servers or somewhere on my hard disk, on my local tower, but I haven't been able to find it. I think that that's where we're headed. I think we're headed towards a world where wherever we go, we've got our cloud-based home screen and cloud-based applications, cloud-based documents with us wherever we go. And I think that's going to occupy the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah, so I agree with that. And I think the cloud stuff is, in a way, it's going on right now, right? We're in these early phases of it where it's not clear who the biggest players are going to be or who the biggest players that survive are going to be. But it's interesting because cloud is the area where Apple is weakest. And so if the question is about Apple predictions, what I wonder is, does Apple, with or without Steve Jobs, because they were lousy at cloud when Steve was in charge, do they really have the stomach to go back to the desktop, to go back to some of the higher power devices, you know, shift their focus back as they've conquered mobile, right? They're going to make a ton of money on mobile for the next 10 or 15 years. They own it the same way that Microsoft owned desktops in the 90s. So the real question is, do they have the stomach to go back to the other devices where they're not dominant right now, like the desktop, and eat their own lunch there, right? To consume that device and replace it with something else. I don't know if it's a personal cloud that goes in your house, if they're going to commit to having stuff on their servers, whatever it ends up being. But it's not obvious to me that they have or have ever had the willingness to really reimagine the desktop in the way that I think is required to make that happen.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone at Apple is even focused on the desktop right now. I think they've all drunk the Kool-Aid that we're in a post PC world, which is only true from the consumption side.
Yep.
From the creation side, we are very much still in a PC world.
Well, and it's not true from a storage side either. That's a little bit of a klutzy way to say it. But when you think about these cloud systems, the storage and sync, that's still being done by big machines, whether you own them or one of these other companies does. And, you know, I don't know if in the long run we're going to own those machines as kind of personal servers or if other people will. But they just don't seem to love it the way that they love these mobile devices.
You know, I think that's the key to where Apple is going. And I think where they're headed over the next 10 years, I haven't decided what I want to call it, if it's anticipated information or proactive data, but kind of where Google is starting to dabble right now with Google Now, where we get information that's fed to us based on context and location, and our devices learn enough about us that they can feed up the type of data that we need when we need it.
Yeah, but I still think, Jeff, that the Apple's got to go into search if they want to be competitive in that area.
Sure. Yeah, you're absolutely right. They'll have to figure out some way, even if it's not so much a search in the way that Google does search, but in the way that they mine the data that we give them.
Well, or in the way that Siri does search, right? This notion that instead of giving you the search results, you give the content at the other end of the search. That I think is really powerful and really, really interesting, right? It's like you digest the search results a little bit to present them in a way that's more useful. Instead of just saying, here's a bunch of restaurants, you give some real information about restaurant A, B, C, and give you right from there the opportunity to take some real action.
But that doesn't help with the anticipatory side that Jeff was talking about. It is definitely a different way to approach search. And as Apple has noted, local search is the majority of search. It's certainly the most lucrative part of search, blah, blah, blah. And until Apple can actually know as much about us as Google does, it can't do the anticipatory thing. And I think that Jeff's spot on that anticipatory is going to be anticipatory data, anticipatory services. I know we got to come up with something clever for that, but I think that that's a key part of the future.
Yeah, you know, I think those services are going to be really big. They actually, they've always creeped me out, and I don't suspect that I don't see myself really diving into it. The thing that drives me nuts is more of the all my stuff everywhere piece, right? That's the one that I find myself caring about is the Dropbox problem, the iCloud set of problems. Those are much more personally. That's a much bigger itch for me.
Yeah, that's a more near-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Apple's got
we
to
say it's a near-term thing, but at the same time, it's pretty balkanized. I mean, Apple owns music, and Amazon owns everything else that you buy, and Dropbox owns your data. And figuring out
Dropbox owns a very small amount of data.
Well, they do. They're the one I like the most. They're the ones that I think are playing the most kind of heads up ball when it comes to storage, just straight file storage. I think they're doing a solid job.
They're doing a very solid job, but it's still very. I mean, it's not a replacement for. You can't put everything on Dropbox. Not even close.
Right. Oh yeah.
You can only put in those things that you find most important to have access everywhere, and Dropbox does that, in my opinion, better than everybody else.
Right. And of course the stuff that I took off the list, I started with music, and of course that's a huge fraction of the actual gigabytes that we all own, and the other rich media, which may very well come from some of the other big companies. But for everything else, there's Dropbox. Anyway, I think we're still in act one of that all my stuff everywhere game. Because
I think you're right.
Because yeah, if there.
Well, right. So we're figuring out who the players are now, right? That's always act one. What we haven't seen are what the dominant technologies are going to be. So it's fascinating to me that Bertrand Sirlet went to Sirlet. How do you say his name? Sirlet.
Just like that.
Bertrand went to he may be at Parallels now, but he was involved or was in a press release at least for Up There. This kind of cloud operating system startup. Fascinating idea to me, right? One of the core strengths that Apple has had since 1997 has been OS X. And the notion that they're just not built to serve this new generation of file systems. You know, I don't know how much of there are other people that can probably speak better to whether their failures in cloud has been just management and execution or whether it's actually a technology thing. But the idea that people are going to build a fresh technology stack to handle some of this stuff, people might build some really interesting new companies once we get past the consumer space. You know, Dropbox found kind of the consumer space. But what are the underlying technologies? Who are those people that are going to own large parts of the tech stack over the next 10 years? I don't think we know that. So it's near term in the sense that it's happening now in a way that the preemptive search stuff is really pretty klutzy now. But I think it's a more, let me say it this way. I think it's more likely to be Apple's undoing if Apple is to have an undoing.
Fair enough. And on that rather chipper note.
Hey guys, this was fun.
It was fun.
Incredibly fun.
See yourself out and make sure you lock that damn door.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Exactly.
That's right.
Take care, guys.
Wow, that was awesome seeing Ricky. I can't believe how much older he looks now.
Yeah, he's so much bigger than he was.
I know.
He came up to my belt, I think, the last time I saw him.
Yeah, our little Dr. Ricky, grown up.
It's Dr. Mr. Ricky to you.
Yeah, well, you know, we're on close terms, so I get to call him Dr. Ricky.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. All right, well, thank goodness now that should be the last of the guests. We can get on with our show.
Finally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that?
What's that sound?
Oh, no.
Did someone just beam in?
Where am I?
Gene?
This is not Las Vegas.
No, it certainly isn't.
Scotty played a joke on me again.
Oh, that is not good news for you. That is not good news for you. Well,
excuse me, Scotty. I'm not getting any connection in this room.
Yeah, we have the shielding up. So, everybody, it's Gene Steinberg from the Tech Night Owl.
Well, welcome to the TMO Towers. You're in our recording studio.
Oh, that's it. Kind of dark, though.
Yeah, it is. It's we don't really have enough money for lights.
You told me it was mood lighting.
Shh.
Huh.
Well, Gene, while we have you here, we've had other guests drop by today. It's our 200th episode for the Apple Context Machine, and they've been giving us our Apple predictions. You want to, be put on the spot and tell us what your Apple predictions are?
Predictions? I'll tell you what. Here's a prediction. Apple will produce no new products for the rest of 2013. In fact, maybe what they'll do is they will give the shares back to the stockholders and sell off the company. No, somebody asked them to do that. What, about 15 years ago? And that company is trying to get away with that, and it's not going to work.
But
sorry, Michael Dell, it didn't work. Seriously, I don't know. The thing I keep thinking about here is why people are obsessed about an Apple-branded TV set. I'm trying to figure out why we need an Apple-branded TV set. And the only thing I can come to a conclusion about is that Apple should basically build an Apple TV set-top box on steroids that deals with the most difficult problem people have with a TV set. It's not turning on the set. It's not changing channels. It is switching amongst all the multiple devices. So I don't know about you guys. You have maybe the Xbox and the Wii, and you've got the Blu-ray player, and you've got the Apple TV box, and you got the DVR, and you've got the surround sound system.
And the cable box. Pardon? And the cable box.
Well, that's what I say, the DVR. Okay. Same difference. Sure.
Fair enough.
Okay. Whatever it is, you got five or six different things. You have to switch among them. You get something like a remote control, like a Harmony, a Logitech Harmony. And it's got to basically be aimed in a way that it picks up all the sensors, sends the signal out, and figures out how to switch from one source to another. And maybe 30% of the time it misses because, you aim the remote too high, too low, and you've got to run through some crazy fix of that. It doesn't work very well. Programming it can be very easy or very difficult. So what Apple could do is find a way to solve the problem of having multiple devices because Apple can't replace them. Apple can't replace all the devices on your TV set. Even if they got all the content providers to come in there and set up a streaming service, well, there's still going to be a device that's involved that has to be switched to. So that would be an area where maybe the Apple TV is also a universal remote controller switching mechanism and handles all the rest of the stuff. That's one thing. We're seeing that now, by the way, in some of these new smartphones from Samsung and HTC. They include universal remotes. So maybe a universal remote that works. And then seamlessly it works among all your devices. That would be one problem to solve. So the point is here with Apple, when they come out with a new product, a new initiative, it has to solve a problem that exists with the previous products. Like with the iPod, it's obvious all the previous music players were junk. With the iPhone, the smartphones were playthings for executives or for power users. They made it warm, fuzzy, and friendly. Tablets went nowhere, so Apple figured a way with the iPad. So with the TV and the living room and all that stuff, they have to figure a way to solve the problem. And the problem most people have is dealing with multiple devices. They want to make their TV experience easy and seamless. And Apple doesn't need to build a whole TV set for that. That's one way. And also, you know, imagine an Apple store selling a bunch of 55-inch TVs. Doesn't make it for me. Any other questions, sir?
Well, yeah, let's actually dig into that because I mean, it's funny. You started off by saying that you didn't understand why people are clamoring for this, but you actually made a great case scenario for some problems that Apple could solve. But so are you saying that you don't think that you think Apple can or will do this with simply supercharging the Apple TV itself?
I think if they built a TV, they'd have to solve problems. They'd have to do something revolutionary. It's not that Apple just puts their name on a TV set and it has a fancy picture and has the iOS and it has Siri and all that stuff, and miraculously they own the market. It doesn't change the market. They have to change things. They have to revolutionize something. And just building a TV set doesn't do that. But the problem with the TV is the control. Unless Apple has some new kind of picture technology that's totally different, or Apple has tricked out sound systems that are better than buying a sound bar or a surround sound system. And you've already got that kind of covered with the Bose system, but it costs $5,000, so only three people buy them. So, as I said, I think the only problem there would be which way Apple goes, and with an Apple TV, that would seem to be a pretty good way to solve the problem. It doesn't mean that we'll never build a TV set, but I think that's a way to solve the problem without having to go all that way. That's one thing right there. I guess we can talk about an iWatch too. Does anybody want an iWatch? Would you buy an iWatch, either of you?
I don't even wear a watch.
And my problem is that I do wear a watch.
Do I have a watch? I have a chronograph. Yeah, I like tricked out watches. But then they're saying, okay, it's going to be a peripheral to your smartphone. That's one of the arguments being made. So we have the Arm Watch or some of those other kind of watches that are out there now that are basically, they pick up information from your smartphone. They present it on this tiny screen. And other people are saying, well, what about Dick Tracy? What about the Dick Tracy watch? And imagine everybody in uniform getting phone calls and taking their watch, bringing it up to their mouths and talking at their watch. Now, people do talk with the Bluetooth headsets without holding anything, and we've gotten used to that, so I guess we'll get used to people talking to their watches. I think you'd have a Bluetooth headset maybe, but I think to make sense, a smart watch would have to be smart, which is it includes a telephone. So that would be one way of doing it. But because you see that 100 engineers at Apple are working on an iWatch or whatever, doesn't prove it'll ever show its face. I don't know. But it's nice to see how all the other companies are freaked out. Microsoft is thinking about a smartwatch, and Samsung is going to make one. Apple freaks out everybody. So just watching these companies make millions of dollars in investments in something Apple will never produce got to be fun.
Yeah, I think there's something to this project, though. I think there's something to the rumors on this project. You know, there's the reality that that products that make it past a certain point at Apple almost always ship.
It is how wearable devices should go. What direction? Would it be a wristwatch? And if so, I think it would have to be more than just a peripheral. It would have to be something that can stand by itself. Because as soon as you're forced to take your smartphone, suddenly you have two devices, not one. It's not very convenient. That could be the cheap iPhone.
That could be the cheap iPhone.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah.
Because part of it is, here's everybody saying Apple should do a cheap phone, but you know how that goes. All the critics say Apple should do this. Apple should do that. Apple should license Mac OS. Look what they did back in the 90s. Apple licensed the Mac OS. It nearly killed the company. So Apple does best not listening to the critics.
That is definitely true. That is definitely true. So are you, what's your actual prediction here? You, see, you're dissecting the two of the rumors that are out there. What is Gene Steinberg's prediction?
I think there will be a souped up Apple TV. I think there's a small chance of an iWatch. As far as a cheap iPhone, possibly a cheaper iPhone, instead of selling last year's product or the one from the year before, they come up with a more unique, elegant, entry-level iPhone that's somewhat cheaper than the current model. I think the iPhone 4 is $400 or $450 unlocked, depending on where you go, if they made it for, say, $300 or $329 or something. That would be the cheap iPhone. But it wouldn't be a cheap iPhone, if you get my drift.
Yeah. Definitely. All right, so a souped-up Apple TV set-top box.
Right.
And an inexpensive or less expensive iPhone in the form of a wearable device.
Or both, a lower-cost iPhone, but still something that retains the elegance of the existing iPhone.
All right. It's pretty specific.
It's yes, not Atlantic. It's specific. Listen.
What's your time frame?
Time frame. Okay. Well, I don't think you'll see much of anything from Apple until May or June. By June, it's a WWDC. There'll be the new Mac Pro, the Mac Pro replacement. I'm hoping they'll make it lighter. I'm hoping they'll make it smaller. I think the present one is just too big and too heavy. I think Apple could do that. You'll definitely see the Mac Pro. There'll be product refreshes for iMac, Mac Mini, MacBook Pro, et cetera, late fall. The next iPhone, July, August timeframe. The unknown devices, maybe in the fall, because they're more consumer-oriented, like, for example, an Apple TV on steroids.
All right. Why don't you take us out with your top three iOS apps?
Okay. Number one, Tapatalk, which is a forum app. So I have three forums that I run, technightowl.com, rockwoods.com, theparacast.com, and we use Tapatalk as the mobile interface. It's available for Android and iOS. So I use that. There's a free version to read the forums that you use if those forums are using Tapatalk. There is a paid version for $2.99 if you want to post. That's how they make their money. You want to post, you got to pay for it.
That makes
WordPress.
Sense.
WordPress, because we have lots of WordPress stuff going on with my site. So this allows me to at least edit the entries on those sites. The WordPress iOS app, I don't think it's really suitable to put up a blog post by scratch if it's more than a paragraph or two. But to edit, that's fine. IMDb.com. I am a movie freak. Some people say I'm just a freak. I am a movie freak, and I've got to have that app running. Got to check out something. I watch a TV show. Let me see what that actor was in last time. Oh, William Finchler. He's going to be Butch Cavendish in The Lone Ranger. You know, Butch Cavendish is the classic villain. He's a Lex Luthor to The Lone Ranger. He's the villain who always shows up. So I want to see who is going to play him. That kind of thing.
Excellent.
There you go.
All right, those are good. Awesome. Those are good calls, Gene. Thanks for stopping by on our 200th episode. And although you know, I'm sorry that we had to bribe Scotty to make it happen, but we definitely appreciate your time.
Excuse me, Scotty, beam me up.
All right. Well, that was really cool having Gene beam in and beam out. I think that's the first time we've ever had anyone use a transporter system to break into the towers.
I suspect it'll be the last.
Yeah, well, you know, once I talked to Dave about a full tower Faraday cage, yeah, probably.
Yeah, we should be good there. We should be good.
Yeah.
And nonetheless, it's good that...
Are you feeling okay, Brian?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. So it's great that we've gotten the last of the these guests out of the way.
Are you sure you didn't eat something bad?
No, I thought that was you.
Is there someone in the bushes? And why do we have bushes in the studio?
That is most peculiar. Hey, look. It's a bear. It's a big, roly-poly, cuddly, bald-headed bear.
Oh, that's the best kind. Those are the Peter Coens.
Peter Coen! Peter Coen, what are you doing here?
Hey, how you doing? Just hanging out.
Oh, that's good. Have you been here the whole time?
Yeah. Do I have to put pants on for this?
No, I don't.
Good.
No. we are a pants-optional recording studio.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love this place.
So it's nice that you could stop by on this, our 200th episode.
Thank you very much for making it to 200, guys, and I'm delighted to be here.
So Peter Coen is very, very well known in the Mac world, so we probably don't need to introduce him. However, it does seem courteous.
Yeah, if we're going to introduce someone at the beginning of them being here, it might as well be Peter.
I just will be Peter. So Peter, of course, worked for many years at Macworld and before that at Mac Central. And you, of course, had a gaming site, Peter. What was that called?
Mac Gaming.
Mac Gaming. Excellent. And
I can see why you couldn't remember that name, Brian.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Listeners, this is the second time through this because I'm a real doofus, but that's another point. So I actually did know it was Mac Gaming.
Oh, I assumed you'd actually forgotten already.
No, we'll edit that out. All right. So, and then currently you, of course, are at The Loop with Jim Dalrymple.
That's right.
And you just announced the new gig, a second gig, an additional gig at iMore.
Yes, working with Renee Ritchie. I'm very excited to start working with Renee.
That's fantastic.
Making you a busy man and an angry man.
Yes. Yes. Don't forget about Angry Mac Bastards.
Yes.
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 Yes, my podcast with John Welch and Darby Lyons.
Estas en muy bueno.
So, yes, that's me.
That is you. Well, we've been having folks on today on this, as I said, our 200th episode.
No, right. People have been interrupting our show.
Oh, right. People have been just showing up and barging in and stuff. And we've been asking them about their Apple predictions. So, let's put you in the same spotlight. What are your Apple predictions?
Well, I think that the stock will be trading at 12.75 by October.
12.75, a little bit more than a fourth of their cash on hand.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
that seems reasonable.
So, yeah, I mean, should buy now?
If you take exactly, buy now, especially if you never want to be able to wear pants again.
That's a leg match made in heaven.
They, you know, the stock has been dropping precipitously for months, and it doesn't seem like the end is in sight. And I just think it's a little bit crazy because when you take a look at their earnings, you know, Apple's in a completely different place. But, you know, the pundits and the Wall Street analysts are cashing out Apple in a big way right now, and it's disturbing to see.
Well, you know, I think that
spit it out, Brian.
I'm trying. Our readers at the Mac Observer often seem to take exception to my reporting and editorializing on this issue. But the reality is that Apple's stock is what's been happening with Apple stock since September. I think it was September 19th when it closed at an all-time high of 705. That Apple bears some responsibility for what's going on. And in particular, at this point in the game, it's been 6 months since Apple has announced anything. Of course, 6 months ago, Apple pretty much announced everything. So that's not the issue. The issue is that not everybody understands Apple, and Apple has not been in charge of its own news cycle.
That is a good point. You're right. Apple hasn't been in charge of its own news cycle. Gee, what's different about Apple now versus a couple of years ago that might explain that discrepancy?
I don't know. Tell us, Peter.
Well, you know, and I think that this is a very real problem when you put an operations guy in charge of a company that previously had been run by a gentleman with, you know, a tremendous amount of charisma and a tremendous amount of show appeal.
And a product guy. He is a product guy.
Yeah, he's a product guy. And, you know, the problem is that Tim Cook is just not as interesting as Steve Jobs is. you know.
It's true.
And I think that explains a lot of it. And the other thing is that's happened really since Steve Jobs passing. I mean, you know, and I'm sorry to haul out the what would Steve Jobs do trope. I know that it's really been overplayed by the media over the years, but you know, Samsung has really sort of risen ascendant as well, which has made Apple's job, I think, a little more difficult than it's accustomed to being, because for a while there, it didn't really look like anyone in the Android space was able to compete with Apple in terms of sort of winning the hearts and minds, not only of Wall Street, but also of general consumers. But I see a lot of people out there with Samsung products, and they like them, and they use them, and they don't care that they're not iPhones. You know, so Samsung has done a very good job of you know, of carving out an identity for itself that is not Apple.
I think Google gets some credit there for Jelly Bean too.
Yeah, Google deserves a little bit of credit for Jelly Bean for sure. You know, it's a nice, stable, good release. And Samsung's got some cool phones. I don't particularly like them, but I understand why other people do.
You know, when you brought up the Steve Jobs trope, I think that was totally appropriate, because Tim Cook is in a hard place, because everyone is comparing what he's doing to Steve Jobs, and he doesn't have the same personality. So people are looking at Apple right now expecting to have the same, and I hate to use the term rock star, but rock star presence that Steve Jobs brought when he would speak. And that's not Tim Cook. And as long as we have analysts and pundits and the media in general comparing everything that Tim Cook is doing to what they think Steve Jobs would do, I think it's going to be very difficult for him to create the new voice that Apple needs.
Can I take that and run with it a little bit?
Run.
It's even more fundamental than that. If Apple had gone 3 years ago, 4 years ago, if Apple had gone 6 months without announcing something, which I don't actually think Apple did, the prevailing winds would have been, oh my God, what is Apple going to do? It's been 6 months since they've done anything. Clearly something major is coming along. When it happens under Tim Cook's watch, the prevailing wind is, yep, see, told you. They've lost their mojo.
I think Tim was doomed from the start, though, because, I mean, you know, Tim is the rebound boyfriend. You know, everybody, you know, loved Steve Jobs. Love him or hate him, everybody admired him, at least. And, you know, Tim Cook is Wall Street's rebound boyfriend. And from that perspective, he was doomed to just not live up to his predecessor's his predecessor's mojo, unfortunately. But I agree with you.
Peter,
I think
I got to interrupt. I would say that is absolutely valid for the first 2 years, but I think that that's way too early to actually pass judgment on this total tenure. If in 2 years after having taken over the company, if Apple still hasn't done something really interesting, then that will probably be Tim Cook's epitaph. But if he does do something interesting, I think that'll change the rules.
Okay, he has done some interesting things. It just doesn't happen to be yet with hardware, software. He's done a lot for Apple's, I'll call it their outreach program, changing the way Apple handles charity things, like employee.
No one cares about that. Wall Street definitely doesn't care about that. It's the products where it matters.
Right. But to say he hasn't done anything, I think it's not fair. And look at what's happening with changing working conditions for factory workers in China. And Tim Cook has a lot to do with that.
Touchy feely, blah blah blah. Bottom lines.
Yeah, and therein lies the rub, because we're not seeing whatever the holographic iPad, whatever thing is hitting store shelves right now. And
where's the iWatch? Where's the iTV?
Right.
Where's, you know, iOS 7? Where's the cheap iPhone? The amount of armchair quarterbacking to try to figure out Apple's product development process is just astonishing to me. And
well,
yeah, I love how, you know, Gene Munster sort of comes out with, you know, this fantasy about the Apple television, and that actually draws other analysts into this discussion about when the television is going to be and what it's going to be like when it's created. And, you know, it sort of sets off the self-perpetuating monstrosity of idiocy and supposition.
Okay, but I know analysts who are plugged in, who are truly plugged into Apple supply chain, who believe that Apple is mucking about in that space. And I mean, I think there's definitely some fire to that particular smoke. It's just a matter of what Apple eventually does and when it actually does.
I'll believe it when I see it. It's a commodity market. It doesn't make any sense for Apple to participate there. Apple doesn't have any way of remaking that in a way that makes sense.
But yeah, but same thing was true with the cell phone industry.
No, the same thing wasn't true with the cell phone industry at all. The smartphone
was utterly a commodity market.
The smartphone market was a completely untapped market, with the exception of the BlackBerry and a few other products. And conventional wisdom at the time was that market was going to grow. Analysts didn't know exactly by how much. They didn't know that it was going to basically take over the cell phone market, but they knew that was a burgeoning market. And up until then, you know, BlackBerry just kind of owned the space. You know, and Apple came in and reinvented the way a smartphone should work, and others followed. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. But, you know, Apple saw an opportunity to build out a part of the market that didn't really exist. I just don't see the same thing happening with televisions. When you've got 4K TVs coming out now from Seiki, which is a Chinese manufacturer, they're selling a 60-inch 4K TV that's going to come out this summer for $1,500. You know, how can Apple compete with that?
True enough. I know that if Apple does decide to compete with it, that it will be a game changing device. I also cannot see. Yeah, I don't think they're going to come in with a Me Too, a Me Too commodity device. It'll have to be something disruptive, or they won't do it.
Or they're just going to continue to refine the Apple TV and figure out cool ways to make it work better and with more things, and, you know, ultimately figure out a way to replace or supplant the way that people are using their televisions now with that thing.
See, I'm more inclined to think that's what's going to happen, because then Apple can take over every television, not just the televisions they sell.
So that would be my second guess about what Apple's got up its sleeve. We're going to see a new Apple TV come down the pike that's not going to be an Apple television. It's going to be a revision to the black box, but it's going to be more capable than ever before. I mean, what did Tim Cook say with his interview with, who was it, Brian Williams last year? You know, that TV was an area of intense interest for Apple, and everybody took that to mean, ooh, Apple's working on a television. No, you know, just that Apple, that the television is an area of intense interest for Apple. You know, you take a look at the way that a TV works, and it's a miserable user experience. You know, I've got to figure out which input to use, and, you know, if my stereo is connected to my through my entertainment system, then that becomes an additional hassle. And, okay, I can go out and buy a, you know, Harmony remote from Logitech to integrate the whole thing together, or use my multifunction remote from my cable company, but then that doesn't work right with certain, you know, products that I've got. And the whole thing is just it's a quagmire. And the first company that can offer a unified, really great user experience for that is going to be able to make a lot of money, and I think that's Apple. But I don't see them doing it with an actual panel that you put on a credenza or up on your wall. I see them doing it with a peripheral like the Apple TV.
I understand your reasoning. I do understand your reasoning. I think though that the set top market box, the set top box market is so, is such a you know, it's barely a line item is what I'm trying to say. It's barely a line item on Apple's P&L, and I don't think even a revolutionary set top box that everybody had to have is really going to move the needle. And I think that Tim Cook does want to move the needle, and selling TV sets could in fact move the needle.
What if the Apple TV as it is today, as barely more than a line item, is exactly what Apple wants, because they can continue with their, oh, it's just a hobby line. And that makes it much easier, I think, to get the types of content deals that they would want to turn the Apple TV into a whole Nexus device, if you will. And once they've done that, then
it takes
off.
They want to move the needle, though. Well, I think they want to be a $250 billion
and
business.
Once they take what everyone perceives as a hobby and get all the pieces in place, then they show what they really want for the Apple TV, which is the needle-moving device that takes over everyone's living room.
Maybe. So give us an actual prediction.
You mean outside of the two that I've already given you?
Well, all right, then actually to succinctly restate the predictions.
Okay, prediction one is that Apple's stock is going to continue to drop. I'm not sure where the bottom is. I was joking about 12 and three quarters, but I think that Apple stock is still on a downward trend because Wall Street analysts suck.
Okay.
Two, I think that Apple's going to revise the Apple TV this year, and that the new black box is going to do something cool, but we're not going to see an Apple television now or dare say anytime in the future.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if not anytime soon, then never for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you there. All right. Well, those are pretty rock solid predictions.
All right.
All right. So why don't you take us out on your top three iOS apps?
Top three iOS apps. Well, I would have to give a big shout out to Reader, the excellent news reader application. I use it on my iPad and find it absolutely indispensable.
Okay.
And I'm very glad that the developers continuing to figure out ways to get it to work even after Google shuts down Google Reader, which it's dependent on for syncing content.
Right.
Let's see. Number two would be Echo Phone. My favorite Twitter client for iOS devices, mainly because it synchronizes between its desktop and iOS counterparts.
That is nifty.
Now, the future of Echo Phone, like with all Twitter clients outside of the official one, is sort of up in the air because the developer has said, you know, if Twitter breaks something in the API, the application programming interface, we're not going to fix it. This product is basically going to work for as long as it works, but we can't push it because Twitter has, of course, locked out third-party developers from really expanding their customer base dramatically.
Right, right.
But I still love the product, and I still recommend it to anybody who's looking for a Twitter client for their Mac or their iOS device. And then the third...
Plus, we can hope that Twitter pulls its... corporate head out of its corporate butt.
Yeah, we can hope.
We can live in hope.
Yeah, and die in despair, I think, is the expression.
Yeah.
So the third one is this absurdly fun free-to-play game that I've been playing now since last year that I absolutely love called Happy Street. And I can't quite put my finger on why I like Happy Street so much. I know that my wife plays it relentlessly, and that's certainly a strong motivation for me to continue playing it. But it's a ridiculous amount of just stupid fun because it's a city building game, but entirely two dimensional, side scrolling from left to right, and it's filled with these sort of anthropomorphic animal characters that have all these sort of bizarre interactions, and there are these little storylines that you have to progress down, and stuff that you have to build for them or make using the various tools that you've got at your disposal. And you can build a thriving little town with coffee shops and bus stops and taxi stands and places to live and all sorts of other fun stuff. Very non-threatening. And it's one of the few free-to-play games that I've actually played where you actually don't have to spend a dime to play it forever. You know, there certainly is a mechanism in there that you can use to sort of get ahead or get a leg up, because it's got an in-game currency called flues, and you can actually pay real money, real-world money as an in-app purchase to get more flues so you can build things faster. But it's entirely optional, which is one of the reasons why I like it so much. And honestly, of all the games on my iPad, and I'm a huge gamer, that's the one I go back to most often.
Huh. All right. That's fantastic. So thank you for stopping by, Mr. Peter Cohen.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
And I love that you included a game in your picks. You're the only person that has. That's very cool.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? All right, everybody. That's Peter Cohen. And let's make sure we actually lock the door this time.
Yeah. And Peter, if you want those bushes, you can have them.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Well, that was really cool that Peter dropped by. And by dropped by, I mean stalked us and hid in the planters for a while.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but...
I always knew there was something wrong with that guy.
Yeah, and apparently now we know what it is. He's allergic to the plants he was in.
Exactly. That we kid, of course. We love Peter Cohen, and we appreciate everybody that came by. What a nice surprise for our 200th episode, and we didn't even arrange it.
I know. We were not expecting any of that. So that was exactly. Just absolutely wonderful on so many levels.
It was. Unfortunately, it's really too bad that all of them were just wrong about everything. Oh, wait. That's not the case. No, seriously, though. So we sort of mentioned it through a couple times in the show, but just to make it clear, we didn't give anybody any stipulations about what to talk about. We said, talk about Apple predictions. And when they said, well, what do you mean? We said, it's up for you to decide.
Right. And we didn't tell anyone what anyone else spoke about.
Yeah. Yeah. So every time we recorded the people, no one had any idea what the people coming before them or after them were saying. And I think that that's a super, super, super interesting. What's my point here?
You found it fascinating that there were some common threads among what all the people were saying.
Yes, Dave Hamilton just distracted me with a Skype message. So I apologize.
You know, once again, Dave doesn't look at the red light.
Exactly. Just ruins everything, that guy. But so we had everyone wanted to talk, almost everyone wanted to talk about the TV, and almost everyone wanted to talk about the so-called iWatch.
Right. And speaking of Dave, I found it interesting that he was the person that came right out with a very firm belief that we will have an Apple television before the end of the year.
As in a television set.
Yes.
Because everybody else that we talked to who talked about that said, pshaw.
Or not yet.
Right. Actually, I think there was a pretty strong current of doubting. There was a pretty strong current of what could Apple possibly bring to the table. And that's where I disagree with them. I know it, Peter directly argued with me on this, but I'm going to restate it. People said the same stuff about the cell phone industry. It was a commodity market. You know, there's no profits in it. You know, what could Apple possibly do? You know, and then the iPhone rewrote all the rules, and Apple makes all the profits. If Apple can do the same thing with a physical television set, it will.
Sure, I will accept that. I, however, am in the camp of why not just do it all with Apple TV, meaning the set-top box, and let everyone bring their own television to the game.
Well, because Apple has already set this really low price for the Apple TV at $99. Even if they doubled it because it's got all sorts of new whiz-bang features, at $199. It takes a lot of $199 or $99 little, you know, pucks to make the same kind of money you can make off of selling one television set.
True, but the refresh cycle, as far as customer purchases go, is much faster for a product like Apple TV than for a television. I mean, the average cycle for buying a new television is 7 years.
Yeah, but people can buy a new television set for their living room. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, or a year later, or 3 years later, can buy another new television for their living room and move the current one into their bedroom, or move it into the kids' room, or move it into the den, move it into the office. There's a lot of buying opportunities. I mean, the television set industry is a very, very large industry. It's a I want to say it's $100 billion a year. Is that true? Do we know? Do you know? I'm going to Google that right now.
You Google that right now. And while you Google it, I'm going to say here's another buying opportunity. Going back to Apple TV, at $99 a pop, excuse me, that's almost an impulse buy. And you can buy, let's say you have three TVs in your house, buy three. And now you have one on each television. And
no one wants to do that. I think it's actually easier to sell multiple television sets than it is multiple Apple TV set-top boxes.
Maybe, but my anecdotal evidence says that people like having multiple Apple TVs. I know several people that have an Apple TV in their living room and in their bedroom. And when a new model comes out, they won't even think about it. They'll replace both.
Hmm. Well, that is a good point. But again, Apple doesn't actually make any money on those things. So, you know, hurrah, selling lots of $100 devices. You know, you gotta sell this. I'm looking at, this is from December. It was Katie Huberty, who is an analyst that honestly I don't put a lot of stock in. So, you know, with that said, she was estimating back in December that Apple could sell $13 billion a year worth of television sets. It's 13 million sets. You know, if Apple sold 13 million Apple TV set-top boxes, that's 1.3 $100 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
$130 billion a year, right? Who cares? No, it doesn't move the needle. It doesn't do anything. And it's not particularly disruptive.
Not yet. Maybe it's a sleeper product, and this has been a long-term sleeper product where Apple has content providers thinking that this is no serious threat to their current model, manages to get some deals, more deals than they have right now, and slowly Apple TV becomes that game-changing device.
Okay, first of all, by the way, my math sucks. It's $1.3 billion, which is definitely money.
That's definitely money.
But yes, it's still not enough to move the needle for Apple. I think Apple wants to move the needle. I think Tim Cook in particular wants to move the needle. He's very motivated to leave his mark and move the needle.
Oh, sure. I mean, he has motivation on many levels. So, of course, he wants to move the needle. And, of course, he wants to see Apple grow. And he wants to see Apple disrupt more markets, because that's one of the things that Apple does. So
I think that if Apple can get the content deals that it supposedly wants, it will release a TV set. And that if it can't, we will continue to have the Apple TV set-top box.
I think either way, we will have the Apple TV set-top box. I'm inclined to agree with the idea that there might be a big upgrade to that box that allows it to do far more than it currently does, pushing it closer to being the only set-top box people ultimately need. Yeah, but if Apple can find a way to really disrupt the market with the television, sure, I can see that happening. I'm just not holding my breath for it.
So I don't think that Apple can make the only set-top box that people need, and this is why. the only set-top box that people would need would be, A, displacing all DVD and Blu-ray players, which actually is a possibility, mm-hmm. but B, it also includes displacing all the cable and satellite boxes out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple doesn't play well with others. Apple has no track record, has no demonstrated ability to make deals and work with every cable provider out there, or most of the cable, you know, the majors, the Comcast, the Time Warners, and the DirecTVs and the Dishes. They've never shown any kind of demonstrated ability to do that. And if you look at the problems that TiVo has had trying to work with a DirecTV. You know, the cable providers and the satellite guys, they're all terrified of losing control of the user experience to Apple. They're terrified of that stuff.
Oh, sure.
So I don't think Apple can make the only set-top box you need.
You know, I think you're right. But I think Apple would also like to be the company that makes the only set-top box you need. And I think there's a way that they could make it happen. But it doesn't go down the path of getting the deals with the satellite and cable providers. It goes down a path of finding alternate ways to get the content to us. And we have a taste of that right now with YouTube streaming and Hulu and Netflix and Major League Baseball and Wall Street Journal. They have their channels on Apple TV. And for some people, it's already at a point, and I'm an example, where it's enough that I don't need cable or satellite TV anymore. If they can make more deals like that, they can get more people out of that mix completely.
That is true. I'll give you that. And by the way, this is the most serious disagreement that we've had, I think, since we started doing this show back in 1952?
Early 52. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. This is the most serious disagreement we've had.
It is, but I still love you.
Oh, I still love you too, buddy.
Aww.
Happy anniversary.
Happy
200th episode. What do you call that?
For us, a miracle.
All right. Take us out. That is just, we can't just take us out.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and I really mean that. Feel free to follow me on Twitter or app.net. That will be at Jay Gamet.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y. And you can follow me on app.net at, Brian Chaffin. I'm on geektales.com. You can actually follow my personal blog there. Right?
Oh, that's right. You have an awesome personal blog.
And so do you. You have Fresh Brewed Tales.
Fresh Brewed Tales, yeah. All the ridiculous stuff I see happening at coffee shops. Yeah
that is, I love that stuff. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thanks, Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. That's Ricky Spiro. Recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.